This is Popular Front, a podcast focused on the niche details of modern warfare and underreported conflict with me, Jake Hanrahan. Today we're speaking to journalist and activist Norda Rukadza. He's a part of the grassroots pro-democracy shame movement in Georgia. And today he's going to be talking to us about how the clashes in Georgia this week have flared up, why that happened, and what's going to happen going forward, as it looks like the government has decided for now to scrap the law that kicked off a lot of these protests. If you like what we're doing here at Popular Front, support us at patreon.com/popularfront and get merchandise at popularfront.shop. As you'll have seen in the media, clearly in Western Europe, a lot of people don't fully understand Georgia or its history. I keep seeing people calling it a post-Soviet state rather than just a country, which seems, you know, quite rude. So maybe you can begin by explaining to us what actually happened, where did these clashes come from, and a little bit of the history as to why this is so important right now.
Georgia and Russia, we have a very difficult history. Russia, being a colonial imperial state, has always tried to destroy our state, destroy our sovereignty, destroy our independence. We've been invaded by Russia many times. The last war we had with Russia was in 2008, when we formally lost more than 20% of our territories. Georgia breaks through regions such as Abkhazia and Tsikhinmali region was recognized as an independent sovereign state by Russia, and creeping occupation from Russian state continues every day. We get our citizens kidnapped, tortured, imprisoned by Russian troops, and they are basically located maybe around like 13 kilometers from Tbilisi, which is the capital of Georgia. Georgian people have lived through a Soviet regime. We had thousands and thousands of people murdered, displaced because of Soviet Russia. So this hatred towards Russians and Russia as a state is very strong in Georgia. So currently we have a government, a ruling party of Georgia, which is called Georgian Dream. And what we are seeing for the past 10 years is that they are gradually dragging us back to Russia. If you're familiar with recent history of Ukraine, you might know who Yanukovych was in Ukraine. Yeah. And we are kind of experiencing the same situation in Georgia, where Georgian Dream, the ruling party of Georgia, and the founder of Georgian Dream, Bidzina Ivanishvili, who is ethnically Georgian, but he made all of his fortune in Russia. So we have
lived there for a long time as well, right?
He lived there for a long time, and he made all of his fortune in Russia. So he is basically a Russian oligarch, and he has a strong ties with Russian business elite, Russian political elite. So it kind of gives you a background and sense of where he stands on Georgia's EU integration and stuff like that. So I always compare the situation with Georgian Dream with boiling frog. If you boil the frog in the pot slowly, the frog won't notice how it is being boiled. And this is how Georgian Dream is trying to drug us to Russia step by step, making us closer to Russia basically every day. In Georgia, more than 84% of Georgian population supports Georgia's EU integration. So it's not like Georgian Dream can come out and directly say that they are anti-EU integration because they will get a huge amount of protest and they will probably lose their power. The response from Georgian people regarding this Russian-inspired, Russian-style law was something they didn't expect, probably, because they've done an amazing job in discrediting civil society organizations for years. So they probably thought that nobody would protest, but Georgian people, and especially young people in Georgia, are very smart, are very pro Euro integration. They despise and hate Russia and everything that is connected or affiliated with Russia. So the protests that we've seen for the past 4 or 5 days was mostly young Georgians, Gen Z, millennials going out to the streets and protesting against pro-Russian government. And it was probably around like 100% self-organized. So it is also an important part because in Georgia, you know, political parties are highly discredited. I mean, the opposition political parties. Nobody actually believes in what they say. We don't really have political figures in opposition that are trusted or respected. Well, I mean, more than 90% of them, maybe more, are not respected and trusted. So seeing Georgian citizens, young Georgians, self-mobilizing, fighting in the streets, not being afraid, being brave, is truly inspiring.
Yeah, and talk about this law then, the reason that everybody came out onto the streets. What was that law exactly? What did the parliament want to do with that?
So basically, the law was a copy version of the Russian Foreign Agents Influence Law. And the way Georgian Dream framed the law was that we needed it, I mean, they needed it for transparency of financing of civil society organizations. It was kind of weird that, but the thing is that Georgian law, judiciary system in Georgia and the law in Georgia actually requires for civil society organizations to have a very high level of transparency. So the income, the grants, the donors of civil society organizations are already transparent. We publicly display our financing from international Western partners, so everything is out there in the public, already transparent to everybody who's interested. So it was just a pretext to sabotage Georgia's EU integration process, because we are waiting for the decisions that will be announced in October by the European Council about Georgia's candidate status for European Union membership. So for the past maybe a year, we've seen how Georgian Dream did absolutely everything so that the decision about the candidate status is not positive. They've arrested critical media outlet founders. The polarization is very high. Their rhetoric is highly anti-Western, highly anti-EU and anti-US. They are not fulfilling the 12 recommendations received from European Union in order to get the candidate status. They've elected judges that in the judiciary system that are highly controversial, and I can go on for days, but the things that I believe aggravated Georgian citizens the most was how similar Georgian Dream's messaging was with Putin's messaging. We made short videos comparing how Putin spoke about that so-called foreign agents law and how Georgian Dream members spoke about it. And the thing is that those messages are basically the same. Even the sentences are feel like translated on Georgian from Russian. So it was
2012,
very,
right, when they had their version.
Yes, it was in 2012. Yes. So I think even if before, not many Georgians actually understood clearly what the Georgian dream stood for. I believe now it is very clear for the majority of Georgians that Georgian dream is not a political entity that aims to get Georgia to the EU.
So this law that they wanted to pass, the parliament kind of backed it, and essentially anyone making more than 20% of their income from outside Georgia, they would be deemed a foreign agent, right? Now, if that were to go through and that happened, what kind of consequences could that have? I imagine your movement would then be deemed a foreign agent. If it was implemented, what would happen?
So the thing is that our movement was sadly one of the, I think it was the number one target of Georgian Dream, because every time they spoke about the law, they automatically mentioned shame movement. So we were the number one target along with other civil society organizations. If an organization or an individual would refuse to register, there were fines, even arrest for up to 5 years. And if we just forget for a second all those legal consequences, as the term agent is manipulative, it's divisive, it's humiliating, based on the fact that Georgia has been through Soviet regime for 70 years, it has a very, I mean, the term has a very negative connotation.
So a traitor, basically.
Yeah, basically a betrayer. Yeah. So basically what they were trying to do is to show the public that what we do, what we advocate for as an organization, as a civil society representatives, it's not because that we love our country, but because we are serving interests of other states in our own country. And by that, they, of course, meant our strategic partners, such as European Union states, such as United States of America. And the thing is that this law, of course, wouldn't be applied to the entities in Georgia that are sponsored by Russia, because Georgian Dream nurtures them and kind of make sure that they are fine and protected and even encouraged at some point. They also registered the second version of the law, which is US FARA, and it was much stricter version of the law, but it also comes down to the concept, context of the law, because in the United States, FARA was initiated in 1930s against Nazis' influence in the U.S. So now implementing a FARA or any kind of similar legislation in Georgia would automatically mean that Georgian Dream or the government of Georgia views our Western allies and strategic partners as enemies.
Right. Okay. That's pretty heavy if that got implemented.
Yeah.
And so the clashes, tell us about those. You were there on the ground for that. What were they like? They seemed to get very violent very quickly.
Clashes were exciting, I would say, because, we have this in our constitution that Georgian people have chosen Europe as their European Union as their final destination, and every government must do anything they can to fulfill this choice of Georgian people. So based on the fact that Georgian Dream initiated and supported the law, they were directly going against our constitution. So everything that happened on the ground during the protests was us Georgian people protecting our constitution and protecting our rights and freedom and protecting our choice to be a part of European civilization, to be part of European Union. Like special forces, of course, they were violent, but we've seen them being more violent. For example, in 2019, in June 2019, when we protested against Sergei Gavrilov's Russian Duma members' visit to Georgia, they actually used a lot of rubber bullets, and five people lost their eyeballs. They lost their sight. So now they mostly used tear gas, lots of tear gas and water cannons. But the drive and motivation of citizens and young people was so strong that every time they would disperse us, we would come back to the spot like 10 to 15 minutes later, and we with the same numbers. So the motivation was very strong, and nobody was leaving the premise. We were there to fight for our democracy.
And it seemed like the police went in pretty heavy-handed from what I saw. Like, they were essentially tear gassing peaceful protesters, and then things escalated. There was an attempt to storm the parliament. What happened there?
Well, it was not an attempt to storm the parliament. It was, well, I believe storming a parliament is something else.
Okay.
It was just a situation where everyone was super aggravated, and we just gathered around the parliament, and when protesters saw how many law enforcement agencies law enforcement individuals and special forces were deployed at the place, of course we wanted to show our anger and show to the government that they cannot and won't be able to continue their affairs as they did before, because we were there. But storming parliament is probably something else. I don't think that people were storming the parliament at that day. Yeah, like yesterday or today.
A lot of water cannon was used as well, right?
Yeah, a lot.
In terms of your movement, so you formed around the clashes in 2019, right? Maybe explain what your movement is, the Shame Movement.
So basically, the Shame Movement is what I like to say is a hybrid between a political party and civil society organization. We never participated in elections, but we are very vocal in criticizing the government, because we believe that Georgian Dream is a Russian asset in Georgia, a Russian proxy party in Georgia. So what we are trying to do for the past 3 or 4 years is to mobilize the crowds regarding the issues. We do protest activities. We do raising awareness campaigns. And we make fun of the government and ruling party representatives. And this is the main reason why Georgian Dream despises Shame Movement so much, is because we do the best job possible in crowd mobilization. Last year, on June 20th of 2022, we managed to have the biggest demonstration in the modern history of Georgia, was almost 200,000 people participating. And they are very, very scared of us.
And you're the biggest grassroots movement there, right?
Yep.
How many of there are you, roughly?
As you mentioned, we started as a grassroots movement in 2019, but now we have a organizational structure. We have international organizational donors. So we grew as a movement. They are like 10 founding members of the Shame Movement, but we have the network of around 300 activists around Georgia.
And there's people that are pro-Russian say that all of you lot, like, I mean, what, there was like 30,000 people on the streets at one point. They think all of you guys are paid off by the EU and various other people. What's your response to those kind of people?
To Russians or
well, it's mostly not even Russians. I mean, from what I have gathered, a lot of Russians don't really give a shit. Like, it seems to be like the pro-Russian diaspora, or just like, you know, chronically online political internet people that are like, no, it's a backed coup.
Nothing to say for them.
Yeah, I think that's the best way. Real life will always be you know, internet speculation. So what's next? So the government has said, okay, we're not going to go through with this law, but I saw online that your movement was saying like, no, this is a lie. We think they're going to go, you know, ahead with it, or they're not fully pulling it down. What do you think's happening?
Yes, because we based our statement and our position on the past experiences, because Georgian Dream is known for their tricks, their lies to slower the protest, as they've done it before, as they've done it in 2019 when they promised us the proportional elections and electoral reform, but they failed on us. So we were just cautious. The thing about what's gonna go next actually goes to the statements made by GD representatives today. And they've talked some absurd propagandistic bullshit today about civil society organizations promoting LGBT individuals in Georgia, and like propagandistic Russian Kremlin rhetoric will intensify. I believe, and I'm personally waiting for another wave of repressions, and they will probably come out with another initiative that will be more divisive, and it will probably be harder to unite citizens among around the next thing that Georgian Dream will come up with. Because as I've said already, they have this intention of sabotaging Georgia's EU integration, and they will not stop on this one. Like it was like today was actually the first time in the past 4 or 5 years that Georgian Dream stepped down from their initiative or their goal. It was the first win from civil society, first win for Georgian citizens for many years. But I don't think it will go as smoothly as today.
And some people I saw online were saying, no, it's they're not that pro-Russian. They just want to retain sovereignty because they don't want to be swallowed up by the EU, that kind of thing. What is your response to that?
Well, that's like that's also a traditional Russian Kremlin propagandistic rhetoric. There's like no need for answering to Kremlin propaganda.
Right, but there are some people in Georgia that don't want to be part of the EU, but also don't want to be part of Russia, right?
Well, it's impossible to protect the country from Russian invasion on Russian influence if Georgia stays on its own. What Russian talking cats are talking about. With Georgia being labeled as a neutral country or country that doesn't have aspirations to be part of any bloc, any union, this is the Russian way of thinking, because the time Georgia ends up alone is the best time for Russia to swallow us again. So NATO integration, EU integration is the path that Georgian citizens have chosen, and we made this decision wisely, knowing our history, knowing what our northern neighbor stands for, what their aspirations, what their aims are regarding Georgia. So we must be protected with our European friends.
Yeah, it's self-preservation for you, right?
Yeah.
And I
But it's
mean,
also a cultural and economic aspect.
of course, but you've already been invaded. Like 2008 was a very serious invasion. Those regions are still occupied. What's going on over there in Abkhazia and those places?
It's a difficult question to answer, as they are citizens of Georgia living on the territory of Russian occupied Abkhazia and South Ossetia, what they call. Situation is tough. Economy is hindered. Russians are using people of Abkhazia and people of Samochablo for their terroristic war in Ukraine. And people are slowly starting to realize that Russia is not their friend, and Russia is actually using them for their political agenda.
Right, but they can't. I mean, they don't really have any. There's not much they can do. They can't really get out of that situation, right? There are Russian troops in those regions.
Yeah, But the only solution for this Russian-inspired conflict is for Georgia to become the part of EU, for Georgia to have a better economy, to have a stable political democratic system so that our citizens in Russian-occupied Abkhazia and Samochablo can see what life in Georgia can be. So they want to be integrated into Georgia again.
Mm. What do you think's happening next? I mean, it's kind of calm now. I have a friend who was out there last night. He said it was pretty chill. There was no real unrest. Seems things are really calmed down. How long do you think this will last?
It will probably last as long as Georgian Dream doesn't come up with some crazy BS again.
You think that's likely?
That's very likely.
Yeah, I think you're right.
If you look at Georgia's political history for the past 10 years, it's always GDs that does something that provokes the public.
When are your next elections?
In 2024.
So you've got a year. It seems unlikely to me that they'll be voted in again, but, you know, they do get voted in. Who are their supporter base?
Their supporters are probably brainwashed citizens who have neutral or positive attitudes, feelings towards Russia. They are citizens who despise the previous ruling party, United National Movement. And yeah, basically, this is the electorate of Georgian Dream.
Mm.
And maybe some part of conservative Georgians.
Right. And what was the previous government like?
Previous government was very tough. Previous government was very divisive. Previous government was the one who was responsible for human rights abuse in Georgia, but they were advocating for Georgia's EU integration.
Sounds like you guys are kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah.
What's next for your group, Shame Movement? What do you guys plan to do off the back of all of this?
Well, we are working on a campaign to raise awareness about Georgia's EU integration. So, as I've mentioned, more than 24% of Georgian population supports Georgia's EU integration, but not many people know exactly what benefits will get Georgia from EU integration, what EU proposes. And since the government's pro-Russian propaganda against EU is very strong, and their propagandistic Kremlin narratives are also very strong, we are working on a campaign to raise awareness about EU integration and to basically dismiss counter propagandistic narratives that Georgian Dream spreads about EU.
All right. Well, good luck, mate. Where can people find out about your movement and get in touch with you if they want to?
Well, they can contact me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Shame Movement is also present on every social media platform possible. So, yeah, just reach out for any questions.
What's the handle is what? At Shame Movement.
Yes.
Yeah. And one last question I've got. If there's one misconception about Georgia that other people have, what is it, and how would you say we kind of educate people? Because I have noticed, I honestly don't know that much about Georgia. Like, I've done some reading and I know a few Georgian people, but I was kind of really surprised at how many reporters in Western Europe and anywhere just didn't know a single thing and didn't really seem to care about doing some proper research to find out. So what's a misconception, you would say?
Georgia is a country, not the states in the US. That's it.
Yeah, that's one of the main ones. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and a country, and I really don't like this idea of defining it as like post-Soviet state. I mean, how far do you go with that? That would be like calling Ireland like a post-colonial enclave of Britain, you know? It's ridiculous.
Yes, I mean, seeing like post-Soviet in Western media is disgusting.
I can only imagine. All right, mate, thank you very much for that. We'll be in touch and good luck.
Thank you so much. Bye.
That was journalist and activist Nordar Rukadze talking about the clashes in Georgia, why they flared up, and why so many people came out onto the street to oppose this so-called anti-agent law that the government tried to bring in. Let's see what happens there. To support us, go to patreon.com/popularfront. For your money, you get a lot more extra every month. That's the way we keep moving forward. Patreon, we don't accept any investment from big corporations. Definitely no money from states or anything like that. So the way we keep moving forward is all grassroots. Patreon.com/popularfront. Or if you want, you can buy our merchandise at popularfront.shop. Thank you very much to the sponsors in this episode. They are Oracle Coffee Shop in Portland, Oregon, USA. They're an independent coffee business selling only fair trade products. See them at 3875 Southwest Bond Avenue, 97239. Also, Grind Core House, a pair of independent coffee shops in Philadelphia, USA. One in South, one in West. You can find them on social media at Grind Core House. And our final sponsor, Propagandopolis, an outlet selling and writing about historical propaganda, war propaganda from around the world. You can buy prints at propagandopolis.com. Use a promo code PopularFront10 for 10% off. Follow us on social media. Check out our documentaries at youtube.com/popularfront. Instagram at popular.front, Twitter at popularfront_, and TikTok at popular.front. Music in this episode, the intro was by Home and the outro was by Sam Black. Listen to his music at samblackpf.com. Thank you very much to our high tier Patreons. They are Viola Forvel, Christian Bustamante, Mike Jones, Britt Richardson, Victor Villa, Daniel Verdin, Margosha, Rohan Irvine, Titus Perkins, Ryan Barbadillo, VS, Brian R, Evan Pank, Bradley Hope, Wizard Actual, Claire Hofbauer, Benjamin Tupper, Chungus Bongwater, Siddhartha O, Damien, Cameron Collins, Nicholas Blomberg, Matthew Diffley, Claire, Liana, Robert, Sean, Christianovich, NTHG, Arturo Rafael Macias, Ethan Schwick, Kefir is the Mind Killer, Gabriel K, Elise Middlefer, David McManus, Tom Petrie, James Leons, Bradley Davies, No Gods, No Dogs, No Hamsters, Brendan Crave, BRX, Ben Marshall, Dallas Dunn, LD50 Seattle The Band, K Glitter Vulcan, Adam H, Derivative Fool, Bottle of Water, Larson 8669, Ivan Julien, Bjorn Kirsten, Diamondstein, Michael O'Connor, Jack Doherty, Nicholas Butter, JD, Jav, James Cully, Tynan Daly, Ethan, Shanklin the Painter, Fitzmadrid, Ed Coulthard, D. San, Mike Barone, Ben, Liam Williams, Chris Cusimano, DZA, Giorgio Arani, DR, Amy R, Rubicon, Frank Austin, Amelia Mee, Christina Rivetti, Freya Northman, Nebo, Noah, Andrew Hurley, Vida Provost, Brian McLaughlin, Tom Lockring, Young Wasabi, Tony Bin, JL, Stephen Davila, Dan Dunham, Chad Walker, Lawrence Abrahams, Peter McCormick from What Bitcoin Did, Christopher Martin, Ryan Sandercock, and Moritz Zumbul. Thank you all so much. You're really keeping this moving forward. If you want to support us, patreon.com/popularfront or popularfront.co/support.